I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Brian McRae. He is the founder of Accelerate Coaching and Consulting. He also runs a mastermind called The Boardroom, and it's for financial advisors, CPAs, and other financial professionals. Brian started off in the mortgage business and decided it was time to have a little bit more control over his life. And he sort of stumbled into a coaching and consulting business. And in the process, he was able to generate a ton of leads for his business. And so now he teaches others how to do that and other business leadership lessons. Brian, welcome.
Well, Craig, it is a pleasure. It's an honor. And thank you for the invite. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, and somewhere, you know, more towards the end, we're going to be talking about masterminds. We should probably tell folks how we met.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a guy by the name of Aaron Walker who started this little movement called Iron Sharpens Iron and mastermind groups. And I know Big A pretty well, and I know Derek Champagne very well. I was in a mastermind with them and for years. And anyway, Derek and Big A reached out to me and asked me if I would be willing to come in and talk about faith in the workplace. And so we had a conversation. I think you were a part of that. And then just like so many events, you meet people and have good conversations after you are part of an event. And, you know, we connected, and it was, like I said, it was an honor for you to think of me to be, you know, to share a story with your audience. So thank you.
Well, you know, one of the things I love about podcasting is I get to talk to so many different people who've learned some amazing lessons in life. And so I get to sit here and, you know, in 30 minutes, you know, learn just lessons that people would pay big money to learn from. I mean, I had John Hewitt, the founder of Jackson Hewitt Tax Services, on the podcast. I'm sitting there talking to him for about 30 minutes. I'm like, I mean, this is great. He created not only Jackson Hewitt, but also Liberty Tax Services, the only two national competitors to H&R Block. And I get to talk to him for a half hour. So that's why I invited you. It's like, I get to learn from my guest. It's a really, really cool thing.
Well, this might be a short interview then. So,
well,
I don't have anything like that compared to Mr. Hewitt, but.
Yeah, well, here's something funny. Somebody who works for me, basically, you have to get through her to get on the podcast unless you get a direct invitation from me. And she rejected the CEO of a $1.6 billion company.
Wow.
And so we had one of those teachable moments where I was like, hey, let's just bring the number down to 100 million. If a CEO of any business doing 100 million or more in revenue wants to come on the podcast, the answer is yes. I don't care. You know, yeah. Unless it's in like the cannabis business, that's one place I don't go. But, you know, pretty much any legal business and some illegal businesses, as long as they reform themselves, I'd be interested in what they learn. I don't know if have you ever heard, do you know who Michael Francis is?
I have seen Michael speak. He's got an amazing story.
Wicked, wicked smart, you know, reformed gangster, you know, a capo in the Colombo crime family. And just one of these people has a natural knack for business. And he used to do it for illegal businesses, and now he does it legally.
He is. It's a phenomenal story as well. Yeah. He's gifted.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, you know, in the green room, we were talking a little bit about, you know, I think the journey of so many entrepreneurs is they walk away from what most people would think is a good job and do something that looks crazy and maybe even stupid, and then persevere. And it sounds like that was a little bit of your exit from the mortgage business.
Well, it was definitely my exit from the W-2 world. Yeah, in 2002, I was, I had a I was had a great job, a leader that I was learning a lot from, but it was just a job that candidly I wasn't feeling, I didn't feel good about it. It was I'd be in the car at 6 in the morning, getting out of the car at 6 or 7 at night, and it wasn't. And I might have been physically home, but I wasn't mentally home. And it was bad. And I just had this angst over me for about 5 and a half days a week. Saturday morning, about 11 o'clock, I'd start to feel a little bit better. And then it would start to hit me again Sunday evening. And it just wasn't any fun. So I left that, was mentored. I had what ended up being a mentor of mine that kept pursuing me to get into the mortgage business. And candidly, I didn't really have any business getting in the mortgage business. I didn't know anything about the mortgage industry other than I had one and I knew when my payment was due. But other than that, what I got convicted on was that I could build something that was mine. It was a relationship-driven business. Well, my research showed that the most successful professionals in that industry were relationship-driven and they could build their, there's a lot of latitude on how you could build your business. I loved that. I loved it. And the most successful people that I talked to before I started told me, he said, you can make what you're worth and work when you want. I'm like, I like that. Time and money were two freedoms that I'd like to have. So that's what got me into the business. I had a good mentor and off I went. So again, I've been still in the mortgage business and I've got a team, which you'll hear my journey if you're interested in me sharing that. But that's really in terms of leadership. My entire career prior to the mortgage business was all about building, developing people and wherever I was at. And that's always been kind of a theme is, I like helping people grow and build something that is important to them. So, and that's what, but I took a step back in the mortgage business to really get the base of building that myself and then what started to scale that business back up and build a team. So I'm still in the mortgage business. I'm still coaching. And that's where my, at this phase of my career, that's where my real passion's at is really in the coaching side of it. So.
Yeah. So at some point you started running seminars.
Yeah. Well, that's candidly, I can trace it back to that's how you and I met. So as about 8 or 9 years into my business, the mortgage business, I'd had some success and I don't want to, I'm not trying to impress upon or impress everybody with some things, but I was named a top 1% originator, but it was all through relationships. But if you go back to that time frame, Craig, it was 2010. I'm sitting at my kitchen counter. And for the, if I know your audience is small business owners, most of them know what it's like. You don't know what you're going to be earning, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days out. In many small businesses, you've got to produce. And so I'm sitting there and while I had some success, I'm thinking, what's next? And I was candidly, I just started a new church and I was really starting to take, my next step in my walk and my faith walk. And I just remember sitting at the kitchen counter and I don't say these words lightly, but I believe it was the Holy Spirit that said, just because I was like, what's next? So it was towards the end of the year where everybody's doing their planning for the upcoming year. And I was just kind of thinking, and I heard these words inspire people. I'm like, I had no idea. I just kind of brushed it off. Well, lo and behold, that was about a year later. I ran into less than a year later, I'd met somebody who wrote a book. I asked him some questions, attended one of his events, and he reached out after the event and encouraged me to start an event. And so I did. And that was in August of 2011, Craig. And so the reason I started the event was I was in the mortgage space. And if you think about the economy then, the top two industries that I had relationships with that would refer business to me, refer clients to me, were real estate agents and financial advisors. And their, real estate values were in the tank, and financial advisors weren't managing 401(k)s, they were managing 201(k)s. So their businesses, and so I was looking for something that would encourage people. So I was looking for evergreen things. And the gentleman wrote this book. It was a great book called Seven Levels of Communication. And so when I started the event, I talked about that book for a while, and it was all about relationships and things. It just really started resonating with people. So I just built the entire event. It was free to attend. We had about 15 people at the first one. And, I always said, hey, we're gonna, I'll make this easy to run and easy to attend. And I said, if you enjoyed today, just invite somebody. We're gonna do this the same time next month. And I just committed to doing it once a month and keeping it free. And
Well, you told me that the first one you actually had to bribe people with lunch to get them to
yeah,
come.
we did. We had to get people there. Hey, we're gonna talk about this, but we're gonna buy you lunch. And so it was. We had about 15 people there, and yes, I paid for lunch, and it kept growing, and lunch started to get expensive. So, and I didn't have any sponsors. So I didn't have, let me rephrase, I didn't have enough sponsors. But so we actually got the blessing was we got kicked out of that place because we were taking up too much parking. So that restaurant we got kicked out of, and it moved us around to another place, and it gave us a little bit more space. We outgrew that. Then we moved to another space. We outgrew that. We got kicked out of three different places before we landed, and eventually got kicked out of a fourth. And we ended up at a fifth place. But we ended up getting probably 200 to 300 people a month showing up at a free event, talking about building a business around relationships and really just, timeless strategies of loving on people, caring about them, generosity, curiosity, gratitude, and just sharing stories and then connecting. And so the event was all about connecting people and possibilities. And the possibilities was through things that I was, that I would curate and just share with the audience. And it just kept growing. And
So let
when
me
that
ask this.
happens,
The so every month, two, let's say it was 250, was it the same 250 or was it a new 250 every month?
I would say, it's a good question. I didn't keep track and I never really did a study on it, but there was a core group of probably 40 to 60 people that were there on a consistent basis. It was pretty crazy, to be honest with you, Craig. We always ended up running. I mean, if you, somebody once called it business church, but our event would start at 10 o'clock and we would have standing room only. I told you we outgrew some places and we'd have standing room only. And people were showing up at 8:30 to get a seat. And that was the first thing. I'm like, somebody said, why don't Brian, if could I buy a table? So I'm like, that's a good idea. So we set up tables and they would buy a table. So that was our first sponsor. Somebody was begging me to be able to reserve seats. So it was awesome. Anyway, but no, it wasn't the same all the time. And candidly, it was really about having a giver's heart. And I won't bore you with the philosophy, but we were looking for givers to show up. We were teaching how to be a successful giver in the marketplace, how to give your time, your talent, your treasure. Could be giving, making connections, giving referrals. We just talked about timeless relationship strategies and just unique ways to do it where it wasn't shameless self-promotion or ass begging for referrals. Nobody wants to do that. They hate it. And so I didn't want to talk about it that way. So we just talked about becoming radically referable by being the most influential and likable person in your community that people just couldn't wait to help you. And that's how it helped people open up doors. And it was awesome. So, but that's how and we just encouraged people to invite people that they cared about. And we just kept growing.
It's funny when you talk about that, make being the person they want to help the most. You and I chatted a little bit about my history with COVID. I was in a overcrowded hospital with a disease that could potentially kill anybody that walked into my room. And the nursing staff was overworked. And one of my strategies was I want to be the room that they most want to go into.
Absolutely. That is a great strategy. Well, Craig, it saved your life.
Yeah. Well, I believe it was a miracle, and my wife insisting that, basically when they told her you can't visit your dying husband, she's like, no, let's try another answer. And she bullied her way into the hospital, almost got arrested one time. And but yeah, that's for another conversation. But I heard her in my coma. And
Wow.
so, but kind of going back to that. The thing that really struck me when I was listening to you talk about initially in the green room was, I was a little bit envious and a little bit frustrated because I was like, I'd love to be able to pack, host an event for and have 250 people showing up an hour and a half early and asking to buy tables. What was it? What did you do? What was the magnetism that created that following?
If anything that comes out of my mouth, please know that it's just me trying to share what I learned along the process. Because the credit, in hindsight, candidly, I think we both share a common faith, but God had his hand on it. So the glory goes to him. But he gifted me with something, and I felt like I was supposed to be in that room and be an encouragement to the people that were there. And it was a very simple philosophy, which ties biblically. If you go to the book of Ezra, I call it the Ezra principle, but I think it's Ezra 7:10 that says, Ezra, I'll paraphrase, Ezra studied, he practiced, and he taught. And that's all I did. And I was studying things that I wanted to have in my business. And by the way, when I say the simplest things, I'll give you an example, Craig. One of the things we talked about was handwritten notes and some specific ways to write them. So we would share it 1 week or 1 month, and then somebody would do it and they would have a good story about it. And then I'd put them on a panel because they'd be able to come up. One guy that attended the event took one strategy at that event. Now, I was in the mortgage space, so it attracted a lot of real estate oriented people and financial services. But one guy was a home inspector. He became the number one home inspector in the largest home inspection company in the country. Do you know what his number one strategy was?
What?
Handwritten notes.
Wow.
He was just loving on people with a handwritten note. If you got a handwritten note from this guy, you were like, oh my gosh. He would edify you. He would say thank you. He was the most grateful. And he just took that one strategy and just ran with it. And that's all we did is we talked about these things that anybody could do because it was just loving on people. That's all it was. He would have sent a handwritten note, and when you got it, you kept it. You pinned it on your board, and it said Mark Warren right there. What better advertising can you have about a relationship? Boom. Now, by the way, anytime I could, I was a raving fan of Mark Warren because he would send me a handwritten note probably once every, Mark was a perfect example of somebody that at the event. He was one of the ambassadors and he just kept sharing it. You know what Mark did? He just implemented stuff that made people feel great. He'd bring me a book. He brought me John Maxwell's 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth, inscribed a little handwritten note on the inside of it, laid it on my computer after one of the events. I picked it up. I started reading. I'm like, oh my gosh, guess what I did? I started studying that book. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I started sharing things from that. People loved it. And I'm not trying to brag about it, but it was just such a genuine and authentic way to build something because it wasn't about me. I didn't talk about being in the mortgage business. I didn't brag about being in the mortgage business. I didn't ask for business at the event. I tried to help other people grow their business through time-tested strategies of just loving on other people, build relationships. Love on your clients, love on your referral partners. And as Zig Ziglar says, if you help enough people get what they want, you can have everything you want. And that, I was trying to take that to heart. I didn't ask for much running the event. Actually, I didn't ask for anything other than to invite somebody that you care about. So.
Well, you said it eventually became either your top source or one of your top sources for leads.
Well, just a little distinction. The answer is yes. And it might seem small, but was big to me. You use the term leads, and a lead is something that comes in. I view something, a lead is something that comes in from something that you have no relational affiliation to. If there's a relational affiliation to it, it's a referral. Just not judging that, but
No. I get and no and that, and I appreciate that distinction. When I think about businesses, a lot of
they're
owners,
looking for leads.
they're looking for leads.
And by the way, referrals are a form of leads, but there's a relational equity that usually comes with that. So the short answer is, I think you asked me, the last time I looked at it, well over 60% of my business within about 3 years of running this event was tied to that event. And I did not. So if you think about it, I was not asking for business there, but financial advisors were coming, estate planning attorneys were coming. Real estate agents were coming, and when they would see me share things and help other people, they genuinely had questions. Or in a best case scenario, if there was somebody in the room that showed up that I knew that I wanted to call upon, I could give them a call and they usually would answer when they would, because they saw what the deposits that I was making in the community through this shared learning event. So it
Well,
just made it easier for me to build relationships.
in marriages you hear about the love bank. You can make withdrawals from the love bank as long as you've been continually making deposits. If you're not making deposits and you do a withdrawal, bad things happen. And I've heard somebody describe the same thing in terms of, oh, and I forgot, I'm forgetting the word they use, but basically the value bank. When you deliver value to others, as long as you're delivering values to others, you can make withdrawals. But if you go try to make a withdrawal without doing deposits, the check's going to bounce.
That is the dilemma that most sales professionals have, at least in the ones that I coach. If there's an estate planning attorney and they start calling financial advisors asking for referrals, it's begging for business, or it's shameless self-promotion, and it's just not a fun, it's not an effective way long term to do business, and it's definitely not fulfilling. So,
Yeah.
but I totally agree that emotional bank account is, and the event really, the short story is my best strategic partners, potential strategic partners were showing it up month in, month out, and I didn't have an immediate ask of them. Rarely ever, actually never, other than to implement the stuff that I was sharing so that they could grow their business.
Do you know the origin of the Michelin Guide?
No, the food guide?
Yeah. Have you ever wondered
No.
why a tire company makes a guide to the best restaurants in the world? So in 1900, well over 125, 125 years ago, the Michelin brothers were trying to figure out how to sell more tires. And at the time, the only people that had cars were very wealthy people, and they didn't drive their cars, they had chauffeurs. And so they decided to go out into the French countryside and rate restaurants and hotels. And they put it together in a guide and they gave it to the chauffeurs free of charge. And so a way for the chauffeurs to ingratiate themselves to their boss was they would have a conversation like, "Hey, I've heard about this great restaurant in Deauville, this wonderful inn out in Deauville. Would you like to drive up there this weekend?" And so they would drive from Paris up to Deauville. And they'd wear the tires on the way up, and they'd wear the tires on the way back. And when they needed new tires, guess who got the phone call?
That is brilliant.
But
And
that's what
that
you were
the
doing.
mission that's a that is if you want to tie that to running an event, I get the analogy. That's what it did for me. It just opened doors. Short story, literally every influential connection in my business, all the team members that I have now were either I met through the event or they were referred through the event. My connection to Big A, same thing. I had a speaker at the event. I was listening to the speaker's podcast and I heard Big A talk on Aaron Walker talk on that. That's what prompted me to reach out to him. I think I shared a relationship, business partner, John Rulin, and I met John because somebody knew John, said he'd be great to speak at the event. By the way, you know the power of having a place for people to come, speakers come talk.
Yeah.
It's what you do with a podcast. So, I mean, I got to meet some amazing people through the event. It was just unbelievable. And candidly, it was very much similar to a live local podcast with just a bunch of people in the room and really an interactive audience. So.
So one of the objections that I hear, and I heard this recently, where, so in my business, we, you know, I, you know, I'm a marketing agency and we do inbound marketing, and so we really encourage people make some valuable content that folks will want to download, that they'd be willing to exchange their name and email in order to get it. And somebody made this comment recently, "Well, we don't have to reveal our secret sauce, do we?" And we didn't have a chance to address that. But if you were talking to this person, what would you tell them?
Well, first of all, when I would send out invites, I tried to create an event that people wanted to be at, and I encouraged them to register, although it wasn't mandatory, but I encouraged it so that they could get invites to the next event and all that. So I did get email addresses. That was very helpful. And then giving away the best content, you don't want to give it all away. There is a business philosophy around that. Sell the sizzle, not the steak. And if I were, but my main business at the time was where my main business was mortgage. That's where the vast majority of my income was coming. Actually, all my income was coming from when I started the event. And so giving away things that I was learning or doing in my business, I wasn't teaching mortgage secrets. I was teaching what I was doing to market my business. If I was using handwritten notes, I would tell them how I was doing handwritten notes and the impact it was having, the doors that it would open. If I was sharing with them some unique strategies on how to conduct your one-to-one meetings and setting up an experience that people were, an elevated experience during a one-to-one so that people remember you, I would share that and the results of it. So it was just me. Again, I go back to the Ezra principle. I would study something, I would put it to practice, and then I would come share the results and or the results of other people that had put it to practice. And it just became this positive feedback loop on things that were relationally driven, made people feel good, and helped them build relationships with other people. So I would say give away your best stuff. That's what I would say. Depending on, there's two strategies. I chose to give away everything. And I didn't hide anything because the vast majority of people won't implement anyway. So I didn't have to worry about giving away my best secrets on how I was building relationships because most people wouldn't. I would tell them exactly what I did. And as you know, or you've probably heard the study, less than 3% of people actually do, when they consume knowledge, less than 3% actually implement it. So I didn't have to worry about it.
I published a book with some of our secret sauce about how to build something we call a first time offer. And I can't count the number of people that bought the book, read the book, came to me and said, "Hey, Craig, look at this offer I put together based on what your book said." And I'm like, "Did you read the book? Because that doesn't look like." And it's, I think some of that's the curse of expertise. What seems easy and simple to you is harder for others to implement. And the, you know, and I would even argue, you're like, well, you weren't giving away some of the secret sauce. I would say your biz dev, your, you know, how you were doing your business development was secret sauce. You know, if somebody, you know, and there would be a fear, hey, if I teach this to somebody who's potentially my competitor, all of a sudden they're going to start doing what I'm doing, and I'm going to lose my strategic advantage. But you did that. And all that
Well,
you experienced was growth.
it's one of the things fundamentally, and we would talk about it because candidly, there were other mortgage professionals in the room. Everybody had competitors in the room. And it's interesting, the people that kept showing up in the room had a giver's heart and they were more interested in collaboration versus competition. There was, if somebody felt like that was a competitive environment or they didn't want to be, they didn't come back. So it was kind of the truth of the matter is it was a wonderful filter for me. If people kept showing up at the event, I knew they had a giver's heart. And whenever you would sit down and have a meeting with them, it was a fight over who could help each other the most. It was kind of a race to see who could help each other the most. It was awesome. So it was really when I started sharing how I was building my business. And it attracted people. If they liked it, I knew that that would be a great conversation, regardless of whether we did business. And candidly, it just created an environment where they couldn't, where they wanted to do business with you. So, anyway.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, one thing I want to make sure we cover before we wrap up is your mastermind. Tell me a little bit about
Yeah.
your mastermind.
So, well, I just, by the way, the name of the event that I was running was called the Mastermind Project. And, but the Mastermind group was really, so we had Aaron Walker come speak at the event, but I reached out to him and I was in a group and he candidly put me on the spot. And at one point said, "Brian, do you want to coach?" And the environment, you're in a room with 10, 12 other people and you're on the, you're in the spotlight. And he was holding me capable. I told him that that's what I wanted to do. He knew I wasn't doing it. And he was like, "Hey, do you want to? Do you want it? Do you really want it? You say you want to do it, but do you really want to do it?" And I had to make it, and the answer was yes. And he said, great. And it changed everything for me because he said, great, I need to know what your packages are. And I sent them to him, and one of them was a group coaching. I didn't have a lot of time to do one-to-one coaching, so I was going to do a group event. And so I patterned something exactly after what he had done. And he just encouraged me. Well, you know, Big A's an abundance guy, not a competition guy.
Right.
And so he encouraged me. And so that's what's become the boardroom. So, just so many things. Big A had such a big influence. And for your audience, his name's Aaron Walker. You and I would probably say Aaron. He says Aaron. And when I met him, he said, if you can't say Aaron, just call me Big A. So, but Big A he just kept encouraging me. And as you know, you've probably heard him say, isolation is the enemy of excellence. And what I see with financial advisors, with CPAs, estate planning attorneys, insurance agents, these professions, really a lot of professions, you are focused on marketing, you're focused on sales, you get in your business. And candidly, it is a lot of times it's the loneliest job in the world. And you just need a place where you want to be in a room with other people who are experiencing the same thing. And that's really, I've tried to create the boardroom where it's the room that those individuals want to be in. They can't wait to get there. Wednesday's 3:30, they can't wait to show up because they don't know if they're gonna, they don't know what they're gonna be able to, what they're gonna hear. They might hear something that's gonna change their business. They could be able to help somebody change the trajectory of their business. And the stories and the growth that have happened from that, I mean, it's just so fulfilling to watch people come around each other and watch every individual that's got a vision for their business. They share it with everybody else, and then we just hold each other capable for building that vision. It's a beautiful thing. So anyway, that's the boardroom.
No, that's awesome. And I was a part of a mastermind once that the guy who led it would stand up and say, "The answer to your question is in this room." And he said, "Whatever problem you're wrestling with, somebody in this room has solved it. And so let's get the questions out there." Now, I think that's one of the amazing things about masterminds. If somebody's not in one, they should be in one. So the boardroom is specifically for CPAs, financial advisors, other financial professionals. If somebody fits that criteria and they want to learn more about the boardroom, where would they go to find that?
It's real easy. First name, middle initial, last name. So it's www.briankmcrae.com.
Okay, excellent. And if they need to contact you, I presume it's the same thing.
Yes, absolutely. There's the email address is brian@briankmcrae.com. Candidly, if they want, they can text me as well. They'll get routed to my VA, but we'll get you on the calendar. I can promise you that. So anybody wants to have a conversation around building their version of special, they've got a vision. That's not always an awesome conversation to have. So,
Well, that's awesome. Well, Brian, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies. This has been insightful, applicable.
Craig, thank you for trusting me to be here today, and I hope I've honored the invite. So, thank you for having me.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making an impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.